Brother Ken mentioned this morning the end of times that didn't happen. Thursday last week, I was sitting in my office, and a couple of young guys came in and said, we really want you to think about promoting us or giving us a raise or a title or something, because if this thing's going to end, we'd like to feel like we've accomplished something in our lives. And I, honestly, y'all, I said, what are y'all talking about? They said, I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. I was totally oblivious that the end of time was being named or targeted. And they said, well, you hadn't seen the billboards? No, not between here and where I'm going. And you hadn't seen the news? Well, I don't guess I have. Well, what are you talking about? So they filled me in on the whole deal. I said, oh, well, that's okay. Yeah, we'll take care of you. Your promotion starts May the 23rd. So if the end of the world does come, you can have this seat right here. You guys are good. Y'all run with it. So, a little hot there, brother. So, what was happening there was man trying to know some things that man aren't supposed to know. God's got his plan worked out. He's got all this stuff laid out for us. And there's some things that we don't get to know. There's some things we don't get to understand. And the deeper I try to understand and the more I try to learn, the more I realize the less I know. The more I realize, the less I know. I can remember when I was maybe 10 years ago or so, when I was deep into my Bible study and I was getting smarter about theology and starting to put the pieces together. And with that came a little bit of arrogance, like I'm starting to really get this thing pieced together and I'm getting it, right? But over the years, I just realized that I don't know a whole lot. no matter how much you get into this, it seems like the deeper you might get, the less you really know about what God's going to do and what His plans are for you. You know, Brother Ken talked this morning about sometimes in the tragedies, God teaches us things. And it is confusing that that's God's way. And that kind of lines up a little bit with some of the things I'm going to talk about this morning. In Corinthians 13:12, it says, 1 Corinthians 13:12, it says, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face, now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known." I want to concentrate on the phrase this morning, "but we see through a glass darkly." I've been thinking about this and meditating on this thought for about a week. Brother Mike even brought it up Wednesday night, a little bit of a confirmation to me. Brother Mike described this looking through a glass darkly when he spoke the verse. He said, a glass darkly or a glass dimly. And I thought, well, where did he get that? Where did he get the word dim out of that? Because it's not right there. And it may have been in your study Bible, because as I looked at it a little bit deeper, that's the true meaning of this. It's a dimness or a fogness, almost a foggy, looking into a mirror and your reflection being a little bit foggy. I've got my rear view mirror in my car. If I turn on my interior light and I look into that mirror in the mornings or whatever when it's dark, I can see my face very clearly. But it's one of those monochrome type mirrors where it reacts to the light and it dims to where all you can see is a little bit of a tunnel and barely make out the features of your face. What it's doing is it's trying to diffuse the light coming from the car behind you, right? And that's kind of the picture I get when I think about looking through this glass darkly. You can see a little bit, but you can't see very clearly. Now, God has us down here in the carnal world looking through a glass darkly into His spiritual things. He's decided there's some things that we won't know clearly. We won't get to see clearly. And the strange part about this is the person who wrote this verse was Paul when he was writing to the Corinthians. Now, Paul was a man who wrote almost the whole New Testament. So Paul was describing himself, who wrote most of the New Testament in the light of the Holy Spirit, as someone, he said, we. He didn't say, hey, you guys look through a glass darkly. He said, we look through a glass darkly. And someone that had as much light as he had still considered himself as, I'm still trying to figure this thing out, while God has some mysterious ways. And the Bible says that God's ways are not our ways. So he speaks of a God that is beyond our thinking and beyond our ability to really understand. So when I was thinking about this, if we look through a glass darkly, I was thinking, well, you know, that represents almost a confusion on our part, almost an immature understanding in some ways of what God's thinking. So how is it then that when people are willing to devote their lives and give up major portions of their lives to go support a ministry that they are looking through a glass darkly at? And just looking at my own experiences, sometimes God gives us a little bit of a glimpse through that glass. Sometimes He gives us, just lets us look through and see some light. And something comes very clear to us. I would say when you got saved was a moment where God allowed you to appear through that darkness and see very clear that you needed God in your life. You needed something. There are other times in your life where God's let you see clear. And we probably all have our own stories. And I would say that most of us that have been able to look through this glass, the experience was so personal it would almost be sinful to share it. Because God teaches us things that He needs us to know so that we can live our lives the way we need to live them. For a missionary to drop everything that he has here and go to the Philippines to have nothing, to carry this gospel forward, and all of us just kind of shake our head at that. Now, wow, how does he do that? Well, God has given him a personal look through that glass and has given him something in his soul that he can't deny. And now maybe when he gets over there, you know, there may be some doubt or there may be some, what have I gotten myself into sort of thing. But the commitment stands because of that personal touch that you've gotten from God. I mean, you take our pastor, for instance, gave up a sweet spot out in the corporate world to do exactly what God wanted him to do. He was able to see through that glass and see that God had a specific purpose for him. So I think our commitment, when we commit ourselves to coming to church, you know, 3 days a week, tithing, living a Christian life, most of you, it's because God has let you look through that glass. And you've seen something bigger than yourself. You've seen a purpose that you know you have to fulfill and something that's right for you and right for your life. So if we operate, like I said, in a world where we're looking through this fogged up mirror or this dimly lit glass, and we get these moments of brightness, how is it then that we're supposed to maintain ourselves, maintain our spirituality through this? We've talked a lot of times about going with the light that you're given, or going until you get your next orders. There's a lot to be said for that. I'll tell you, when I first, I guess, you know, 10 years ago or so when I was first kind of coming back into, well, maybe it was, God, I'm getting old. It's a lot longer than 10 years. But when I was trying to get myself grounded back into the church after having been out in the world for a while, I had a lot of insecurities. I had a lot of, I really needed to understand the Word. I really needed to understand how it applied to me. I was trying to settle myself in my salvation, for one thing, and in just in the way what God expected from us and so forth. And I remember thinking, or I remember trying to pray, and I would try to pray all the time, and it felt like I wasn't getting through to God. Have y'all ever been in that situation where you've prayed and prayed and prayed, and it's like, you know, God, what else can I do? You know, I'm I'm even going, you know, at my lunch break and trying to find a spot to pray. I can't seem to get a word from you. I can't seem to get through. Well, it really felt like about 90% of the time I couldn't find God. And it was probably one of the more spiritual times in my life. I was seeking Him so hard, and I just couldn't make that connection. And I came to Brother Ken, and I said, "Brother Ken, I don't get it. Something's going on. I just can't get settled. I can't get through to God. I can't. It seems like, you know, I only touch God one every four times, or one every 10 times I pray." And I was expecting Brother Ken to say, "Well, you need to study harder, or you need to get in there, and you know, this is the way you should do it," that sort of thing. And Brother Ken, I don't know if I'm sure it's a whole different world for you now, but at that time you said, "Welcome to my world. That's the way it is, Brother Andy. That's part of it. Praying is one of the hardest things you can do. Getting access to God is one of the hardest things you can do." And you know, it always stuck with me that even though we were seeking this light, and God says, "If you seek, you will find," and God does give us light, but He does it on His terms, and He does it in His ways. So we spend a lot of our time without the cleanest guidance, or you know, we don't get our hand held or babied through this thing, because I think God wants us to develop some strength so that we can walk and we can live in the light that He does give us. So how is it then that we would follow God's commandments? I would say that when we're walking through our lives and we're making decisions, we should always be weighing what's spiritual and what's carnal. Brother Ken often says that you can never go wrong doing what's right. Now, there's a lot of things in the Bible that are very clear. They're black and white. We don't have to pray about a lot of those things. It's just, these are some things you do, these are some things you don't do. We've got guidance from the Word. God doesn't have to tell us that we shouldn't drink or we shouldn't smoke. God doesn't have to tell us that we should be nice to our fellow man. Those are things that are very clear in His Word. We ought to establish for ourselves some rules that we just won't break. Sometimes when you're given light, there's a foundational truth or a core truth that God's given to you that you're not supposed to cross this line. For me, it was I've got some truths that I can't cross. For instance, drinking alcohol is one that, you know, some people say it's okay to socially drink. You could go pick through this Bible and you could make a case for that. And then you could go pick through the Bible and you could make a case for, you know, zero tolerance. For me, God gave me a personal commitment that, no, don't even go there, don't touch it, don't have the appearance of it. I've got a very strong conviction in that area, a very strong conviction. Now, other people don't. And it's kind of confusing sometimes why God gives some people a very strict conviction and some people not so much centered around that. But God's given you certain boundaries that you shouldn't cross. There's a TV show that I watch sometimes, NCIS, and the head guy there the other night on the TV show, he was scratching out on a notepad rules that he lives by. And at the end of the show, I don't know if any of you guys saw it or even care, but he wrote down rule number 51 or so. He said, "Sometimes you are wrong." You know, that was one of the things that he felt like he needed to write down. But through the show, they were talking about his rules that he should live by. And if you've ever seen the show, he's just an old crotchety guy. He doesn't follow anybody else's rules except for his rules. And one of the ladies was upset because he had broken one of his rules. And that was just like, you don't do that. You know, you set your rules up and your standards. And what I'm thinking is we ought to have our own rules based on the light that God's given us and shown us. Some things that we just won't cross. Some very foundational and fundamental things. I won't do that. You know, having a wandering eye in a marriage. Just cut it. Don't do that. Getting in a situation where you're exposed to temptation. Just don't do it. For me, staying away from alcohol. I come from a long line of alcoholics. It's both sides of the family, all the way through the family tree down into the roots, and as far as I know of, as far as you can go, that's a stay-out zone for me. Don't do it. So as we go through life, we have to weigh the big things that are spiritual and carnal, and then the day-to-day things that are spiritual and carnal. It's so easy to get caught up in what I call the tornado of life. You know, we go to work, we're consumed during the day by work. If you've got the BlackBerry thing going, you're consumed in the evening. It's just a never-ending cycle. You pay the bills, you run the kids where they need to go, and you're sucked into this tornado. And I know we're all in different phases of our lives. Some of you are thinking back on where you were in that phase, and some of you are already through that phase, and some of you are right in the middle of that phase, and that's kind of where I am right now. But we all have these different things in our lives that consume us. And the devil would love to have us focus on all those things that are around us and consuming us and have us living in that tornado. Brother Dennis talked last night about the things that we sign ourselves up for in our homes and the things we commit ourselves to. Sometimes God never intended for us to be struggling the way we are because we've overcommitted ourselves financially, or we've set our sights on things that God never intended us for us to have. But our very nature, our human nature, says we want more. And how much do you want? Well, I just want more. One of the things that we really get distracted on is money, the root of all evil. Remember a preacher, he used to go to this church, he preached just sometimes here and there for the church. I remember he got a job that was going to require him to work on Sundays. And it wasn't some Sundays, it was most Sundays. And I don't judge people that have to go in and work on Sunday, because sometimes you get called in, and I'm not saying it's good, I'm not saying it's bad, I'm just saying it is what it is. But sometimes, you know, nursing homes, they need people on Sunday, hospitals, whatever. I'm not judging anyone. But this guy, he told me that they're going to pay him $50,000. And that was a big deal to him. And he was going to go, you know, he was excited about the job. But I could tell he had this little twinge of remorse that he was going to be out of church a lot for the job. Well, now he's totally out of church. And, you know, some of you are thinking, well, $50,000, that's a lot of money. Some of you are thinking, wow, that's a payday right there. Some of you are thinking, well, I couldn't live on $50,000. That's no big deal. Why would you go trade something for $50,000, right? Why would you go miss church for that? The amounts are relevant because, you know, Brother Ken tells us all the time that whatever your price is, if you'll name it, the devil will meet it. I was listening to an interview the other day. Do you guys know who Warren Buffett is? He's probably one of the most legendary investors, one of the most successful investors that's ever lived. In 2008, he was the richest man in the world, and now he's about the third richest man in the world. I love to hear him talk. He's a very wise person. He articulates things very well. And the other day, he was being interviewed by CNBC, and they're always trying to, you know, pick little morsels of wisdom from him. And he was talking about a company that was owned by a family. I think it was the Mars family, like the candy, the Mars candy family. And they were saying, well, this family, they're being approached to go sell that company. And he said, well, you know, the company's solid. It's got a great valuation. And he said, but you know, that family, they've got generation after generation of a really solid company here, and they do, you know, great things for the community, and they've got something that's really special. And here, one of the richest men in the world, he said, I would never trade that for money. Something like money. So we were talking, this was a context of billions of dollars. We'll trade the very core of our lives for, you know, $50,000. And if $50,000 doesn't do it for you, maybe $150,000 would do it for you. Well, if $150,000 won't do it, well, maybe it's $300,000 that gets you excited. $300,000 not enough? Is maybe $1 million a year is what it takes for you. Well, you know, one of the richest men in the world, his He knows about money. He knows what it brings. He knows what it gives. He knows the pleasures of life, I'm sure. He knows the security that it brings. His words were, well, I wouldn't trade something like family, a family business, for something like money. And that shouldn't be lost on us, because we shouldn't trade things that are relevant for something like money. We ought to always be weighing ourselves against, am I going to trade something that matters for something that doesn't? Very much in the core of my mind, because I get opportunities, and you guys get opportunities, and every time you get an opportunity that comes across, you got to ask yourself, am I trading something that matters for something that doesn't? Money, we all need it, but it doesn't outweigh the things that matter. Another thing that we go for, you guys have all heard the old saying, would you rather be rich or famous? Well, a lot of people would love to be famous. They'd love to be known. A lot of people would love to be rich and just wouldn't care if anybody knew who they were or not. A lot of us really care about the position we have in life, whether it's at your workplace, at the church, within your family, your larger family. A lot of us really fight for an elevated position. I had a coworker recently that was offered a position out of state, and he was being pressured to make a decision quickly. And you could tell that he didn't have his family on board, and he was trying to justify the fact that, you know, it was a good thing, you know, a year or so they would probably make him a VP sort of thing. And anyway, that was 6 months ago, and he went, he took on the new position, and he's great, he's doing a good job at it. He took his wife with him, a couple of his kids with him. He had some grown kids that ended up staying here. And talked to him just the other day, asked him how things were going. He says, well, work's going great, but my wife's moving back to Georgia. Where's the trade here? Where's the balance? You get caught up in this whirlwind. You get caught up in the tornado. And all you can see is the little tunnel or the funnel that you're in, and this stuff swirling around you. And you end up trading the things that are outside the tornado or the things that are foundational in your life, things that matter, for things that don't. And I know he had a tough decision. I'm not judging. But I wouldn't want us to make that same decision when God's given us light around it, when God's given us allowed us to peer through the darkness and put us in a situation where we can make those decisions in context. So my point on the message is I want us to always realize that we look through a glass darkly, and we ought to seek light through that glass. We don't always get light daily and every day. There is a separation there. There is a world that we don't fully get. There is a world that we don't fully consume or understand. And we should always be weighing ourselves the things that matter against the things that don't. So, you know, a few years ago, Jennifer and I went through something with Jenna that put us in a very bad place. She was sick, and our tornado just totally collapsed. It became very quiet in our world around anything that didn't matter. And we focused very quickly and very succinctly on her and what did matter. You know, and she and I sat down during that time, and we talked about, what is God trying to teach us in this situation? What is it that He wants us to know? Because I don't want to do this again. You know, I want to hear through this tragedy what God's trying to say to me. And that time, and I know you guys don't know the details, and I don't even, it's so hard, I don't even like to talk about the details. But she was sick, and it woke us up to the world around us. But now I see myself not realizing what's outside the tornado. I have to go in my mind back to that time in our lives during that tragedy quite often and say, okay, am I still hearing what God was teaching me during that tragedy? Am I still hearing? Am I still doing what God intended, or am I getting into the mess of confusion or into the lack of focus that I had before to where I'm going to need a lesson like that again? Jennifer has an aunt that had a tragedy in her life recently. She lost her daughter and grandchild. It was a horrible incident, but Jennifer and her aunt met a few weeks ago, and they talked and they cried and they had some time together. And Jennifer came back and told me about some of their conversation. And one thing that struck me that she said about that interchange was, everything that used to matter to her doesn't matter anymore. She's totally washed of anything that you used to think, anyone would care about. She's got a totally different perspective on everything about her life and everything about what matters in the world. God does not to that extreme for all of us, and thank goodness that we don't all have to go through what she went through. But God gives us moments of clarity where He's telling us something. Sometimes they're smaller and less intense than that. Sometimes they're very intense. When we get those moments, and we get those moments of light, you need to pack those into the core of your soul and revisit them, just like the gentleman on NCIS. Those are your rules. Those are your rules to live by. Some of them you won't get directly from the Bible because they were the Holy Spirit speaking directly to your soul. So when you get in a situation where you've had to give up something carnal for something spiritual, like these missionaries going to the Philippines, when you've had to give up something or make a sacrifice because you know God didn't want you to do it, you start second-guessing yourself later. Go back to those core truths that God gave you and tap into those. Because guess what? You are in a situation, I'm sorry, you are in a situation where you're looking through a glass darkly. The spiritual things are not always going to be bright and clear for you. And if you get to the point to where everything spiritual is bright and clear to you, I'll gladly step aside and let you guys teach me about that. But this is where I am in my life, where I live in a place where I've just got those handful of things. I've got the Word, but I've just got those handful of things that were very personal to me that God's given me through the years that I can tap into. And I know you guys have them too, and I would encourage you to listen closely to what God has for you in your life. And remember, don't trade things that matter for things that don't. Thank you for your attention.